Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey everybody, welcome to Sawbones, Marital Tour of Misguided Medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
And folks, it's finally here. It's Max Fun Drive time. I don't know if you know this, but we are part of a listener-supported network called Maximum Fun. We talk about it every week.
So. That's right. And when you are a member of our Maximum Fun family, you can directly affect how we make our shows.
Yeah, your support allows us to do this for a living. It allows us to put a lot of work into them and allows Sydney the time to research these episodes and audio equipment and the whole bit. So we really rely on your support. It's been a weird year, we know, and some people may not be in a position to. We totally get it. But if you can, go to MaximumFun.org/join. And support the work that we're doing and the other Max Fun shows are doing. It would really mean the world. Your donation directly supports us. And when you fill out your donation, if you've ever joined before, that you list the shows that you listen to. So you are directly supporting us.
And there are gifts if you are joining or upgrading, and we're going to tell you about those. Not yet.
Not yet. But one I will tell you about. If you can pledge $5 a month, you get access to an absolute treasure trove of new content, bonus content, BOCO in the parlance of Max Fun.
Justin, what are we doing this year for our bonus content?
Well, we already did one bonus episode that has been there for existing members. I forget what that bonus episode is because we recorded it in March.
Is that right?
Yeah, but the more exciting thing for us is, and this is, we're exclusively revealing this information. Sydney and I are launching a secret Max Fun donor only podcast, wherein Sydney and I watch and simultaneously review all of the Fast and Furious movies. It's called Justin and Sydney. No. Fast and Furious and Justin and Sydney.
Yes.
And
Justin's favorite part is the name of the podcast.
The name is very good, if I do say so myself.
It's not like a track. It's not a listen along track.
No, it's not a commentary track.
It's
very stream of consciousness. And that consciousness is diluted by alcohol. There is just a warning, a little bit of swearing because the films have swearing. So we figured that was fair.
Light swearing. We tried to limit it to just the best bits, but I would suggest you see the movies or else they're going to seem very wild.
Very wild. Or don't see the movies. It's up to you.
Well, that's true. I guess, whatever kind of experience you're looking for.
We're going to be getting that link up in the next few days in the Max Fun donor bonus page. So check that out. But Sydney, this new series led you to this week's topic.
That's right. We were watching the Fast and Furious movies, and I don't want to spoil anything in case you haven't seen them yet.
The only way you can spoil them is if you took out all the car stunts. That was
if you took out all the car stunts, the movies would be 3 minutes long each.
Yeah.
There is an amnesia plot line in one of the films. We'll just say that.
Yes.
And I personally, I never really like amnesia plot lines in movies and TV, in part because, and we'll talk about this, there's some fairly common, like unrealistic kind of myths that are reinforced usually. Mm-hmm. And also I find that they're a way of saying like, we don't really know how to deal with complicated emotions for this character. because of these situations that they might feel different ways about things. So we're just going to make them forget everything in the past so they can be somebody else now.
Yeah.
So that we can use them in a different way. And that always frustrates me.
Yeah. But so today we're going to be talking about the reality of amnesia versus the Hollywood illusions.
In movies, amnesia tends to be triggered like at a convenient moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very selective as to what the character can and can't remember.
Right.
Right. Like, for instance, just a random example off the top of my head, maybe the character can remember all of their like fast stunt driving car skills, but has absolutely no memory of where they're from or another human that's known them literally their entire life.
Or their extended family.
Yes.
Because this series is about family. Fast and Furious franchise is about family. Fast and Furious and family. And Justin and Sydney.
And then the way it resolves is always...
You always get bunked on the head again.
Right.
Almost always.
And we're going to get into that.
You either get bunked on the head again or someone loves you so deeply
that you remember
them.
Yeah. That all of a sudden you're looking at them and...
I will be fascinated to hear how many times that has happened.
So the term amnesia traces back to the Greek for forgetfulness or oblivion. There's a river of oblivion in Greek mythology.
It's called 2020.
Amnesty, intentional overlooking. This is all the word amnesia. Comes from all these things. In the ancient writings from like Galen and Hippocrates, when we talk about amnesia, it's usually in the context of another disease. So it's not like amnesia as a disease in and of itself. They're really talking about memory loss associated with something that happened. This person has this condition and one feature of it is that they've lost some memory. But they're not usually talking about like just amnesia as a distinct entity. Somebody came in and forgot who they were. So they'll talk about the stroke or the illness or whatever, and that's it. It really wasn't until the 18th century where you get amnesia as its own thing to start to be like investigated and broken down and classified as to why it might happen and that kind of thing, with a physician and botanist from the 18th century named Boisson de Sauvage, who his main interest was like taxonomy almost, or nosology. So he wanted to like classify diseases.
Okay.
He wrote a big book like breaking down, he was a botanist too, breaking down diseases the same way we kind of break down plants, right? Kingdom, phylum, like this genus, species. He wanted to like take diseases and create those same kind of trees out of them
for plants
like we do with plants.
You know, it's weird, I feel like you have a lot more multidisciplinary people in this in these time periods. When we only knew a little bit about stuff, it seemed like it was easy to learn all of the little bit about a lot of different things.
Yes. Yeah, it's really interesting. I feel like on a slight diversion, especially for physicians, there was this period of time where they were so closely tied to the natural world and then to the humanities and to like all the different kind of academic disciplines that you were expected to pursue, that it was a good time. I mean, even though we didn't know anything, it's a good time for physicians. And then as it got more its own science, like its distinct science that you had to pursue without while ignoring everything else, it's been, in my personal opinion, it's not been as great for medicine.
Yeah.
We need to get back to that broader view.
Yeah. A wide lens.
Because we know more now also, though.
Yeah.
Like we could do so much more than they could do then, which is just, I don't know, here's some amnesia, maybe bleed them.
That's all we got.
So he broke it down into like, why does the amnesia happen? And he had all these different reasons. One could be venereal amnesia.
Venereal. I know there's venereal disease and it's an STD.
Right. So this was probably syphilis.
Syphilis.
Is probably what he was.
Got syphilis so bad.
Without saying it. Yeah. Well, I mean, tertiary syphilis, long-standing chronic untreated syphilis can cause brain damage and certainly amnesia. Memory loss could be part of that, right?
That would
That's really what he's talking about.
That would be bad too, because it's like, I don't remember how I got this, so I'm not going to change anything about my lifestyle. And then every single time you get the amnesia again, then you get syphilis again.
Well, no, but remember, it's like that episode of House where the older lady, they find out has syphilis and it's made her have the libido of youth. And so she keeps hitting on House and she doesn't want to get treated for syphilis because she wants to keep her sex drive.
No, I don't remember that exact episode of House, Sydney, but I'm going to take it for granted that that's not your fan fiction that you've written, that that's a real episode of the TV show House. They made a lot of them. So statistically speaking, that probably is an episode of House.
I've never written fan fiction about Hugh Laurie, but I'm not saying I wouldn't.
Fair.
There was also senile, which makes sense. Memory loss associated with age. Traumatic, like you hit your head. Plethoric, which... At that time, there was this belief that, like, you could have too much blood, right? Mm. Too much blood that would, like, fill up your blood vessels and fill up your brain and make you hot.
One. That one we can fix.
Yeah, we can fix that one.
We invented this condition because it's one we can fix.
There was what he called pathematic, which was, like, emotional. Some sort of probably psychological is the word we would use today. But amnesia triggered by... some sort of strong emotional response to an event, something like that. There was cephalgic, which was following a headache. So you get a really bad headache and then you forget everything. I don't know.
Okay.
Intoxication. You can figure that one out. Yeah. And then febrile, which would probably mean like a meningitis or an encephalitis or something like that. So this was a really good, like, complete picture. I mean, he still is leaving some stuff out and there's some stuff to understand, but that's pretty good for the time period of all the different reasons why somebody might forget everything.
Okay.
And this kind of breaking it down would lead to a lot more academic interest in general. Once he kind of published this, and he didn't just do amnesia, by the way, he did like all disease laid out into like defined and named and classified and all that. But this would really get people to study amnesia more and like broaden it to also strokes could cause forgetfulness. And also there was like this thought that hunger, if you got really hungry, you would forget things. I don't find I forget things. I just get really angry.
You forget to not be nice to me.
That's true. That's fair.
You forget to be nice to me. Sorry. Or anybody or... Basically, you just forget sort of basic humanity. You become like unto a monster, I guess mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. And mm-hmm. to put it generally.
I can stop now.
I don't know why I'm still talking. That's the problem.
There was also some interest in, is it permanent or temporary? It seemed like that depending on the cause, amnesia could sometimes be reversed. So like febrile amnesia, which they probably, that means amnesia with a fever. So they're probably talking about some sort of infection, seemed to go away.
Okay. Because with the fever, right?
Because, mm-hmm. I mean, think about, and there, you're probably seeing some delirium in here that wasn't like teased out yet. I mean, think about it. With a really high fever, people can get confused and not seem to remember what's going on around them. And then after it goes away, they get better.
Right.
And then they notice that other kinds of amnesia seem to just persist.
So it's less amnesia and more just like having trouble connecting to the real world.
Yes. That's when we also get Korsakoff, who described a very particular amnesia that came with the long-term use of alcohol, which we know is Korsakoff syndrome, which...
Oh, of course.
You know, well, that's a known entity today. It's very distinct to long-term, you know, regular use of alcohol. It was also begun to be observed that older memories tended to stay. And that's one of the things that I always think is interesting with cinematic depictions of amnesia is that people tend to forget, like, I mean, like I said, where they're from, who their parents were, right. All
their
the
name,
like
name, their life.
Yes.
Yeah.
All the stuff that would be the oldest, most deeply ingrained memories tend to vanish as well. And those actually tend to stay. Not always. I mean, there's different kinds of amnesia. And we'll get into that. But generally speaking, you tend to remember the older stuff. And it's the more recent memories that you forget. And you actually get them back in the reverse order if you do get your memory back that you lost them, which is kind of weird. That's what they tended to observe.
The brain's weird.
And again, this is all... Now our understanding is way more complex and it would depend on what kind of amnesia and why it happened and all that kind of thing. But the basic idea is that like the way that you would lose information. And if you think about older memories versus more recent one, this will kind of make sense. So recent events that just happened, you're going to lose first because they're the, they just happened. Then you're going to lose some ideas, concepts and ideas, because those are not as ingrained as like sensory experiences, memories that you've had.
Okay.
Ideas. Then you can start to lose emotions next. And then you start to lose the habits and the routines, like that, the stuff that you, well, we kind of think about as like muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
That would be further. So I guess you could make the argument that like you would forget how you got in the car crash that caused your memory, but you would not forget how to drive the car really fast.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And then finally, the oldest memories, the stuff that are the, that is the most organized, the most fixed, your that you have like sensory experiences associated with those fixed memories, and that you probably also have reinforced through repetition and through looking at photos. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because we do that to our own memory. We talk about that trip to Disney that we took, you know, a decade ago.
I know that we're only, we can only, I saw this on that show Quiz. Remember we watched that three-part miniseries Quiz starring Matthew McFadden of Succession fame?
Yes.
And they talked about how you can't, every time you remember something, you're remembering the last time you remembered it. Mm-hmm. So you remember, it's a memory of a memory of a memory of a memory of a memory. So there's a lot of degradation there. It's really interesting the way that the brain can mess stuff up like that.
It does. It messes stuff up and it reinforces whatever that idea is the more you recount that memory. Mm-hmm. Whereas something that happened, you know, 10 minutes ago, I haven't had enough time to continue to reinforce that memory. You know, that's why older memories tend to stay.
Mm.
Again, this is all generally speaking. And then there is the distinction between antegrade and retrograde memory loss. Antegrade is like Memento.
Okay.
Or what's the other movie?
Blank Slate.
Yes.
Starring
Finding Dory.
Okay. There's this for Finding Dory. Blank Slate starring Dana Carvey. And
50 First Dates,
Memento.
Yes. So you can't make new memories. So stuff just keeps happening. Like you're like the present is constant.
I'm there. Is that what's going on? I'm there now. I'm living that dream.
It is actually. We are not suffering from collective amnesia, antegrade or otherwise, but it is actually harder to make new memories when the days become difficult to distinguish. The passage of time starts to become nebulous.
That's why you have so many more memories, or why things seem to go faster as you get older, is because your brain reacts to novelty. It saves novelty. So when something happens to you for the first time, something new, your brain's like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to remember this. I'm going to hold on to this. But as you get older, or as you get locked in your house for months on end, the lack of stimulus becomes such that like you aren't forming the memory. So the time seems to get even more messed up because without novelty, your brain isn't activating and saving those memories. Cause it's like, yeah, I've done this. I don't need to save. I don't need to remember any of this. I've seen this before. This is fine. Just do your thing.
Which again, a slight diversion. One thing that you can do to help combat that is if you can come up with anything new to do, anything new to experience, that's really good for your brain right now.
What are Sydney and I doing? We're gardening, we're composting. Mm-hmm. We're woodworking.
Yes.
We're recycling. We're trying to become more sustainable?
I've started knitting again.
Knitting. Sydney's back on the knitting tip.
Yeah. And anything, especially if it's like a new, this is the moment to like, I'm finally going to learn to play the piano or whatever, you know, something. Yeah. But anyway.
Anyway. Neuroplasticity, folks.
The other part about amnesia that you've got to kind of understand why it's happening and if you can fix it, how to fix it, is what part of the memory process has been disrupted?
Because it's a system.
There's where you like take in the information to make the memory.
The hypothalamus.
Well, no, but my point is it the making the memory or is it the retrieving the memory?
Okay.
Right?
So to use kind of an inside out, is it, I don't remember, you remember the little guys that go get the memory?
Yeah.
So is it them that's broken or is it the little console that they use to save the memories up in the where or, all the emojis live.
Or has stuff been dumped into, remember when she forgets things and like the, she like dumped, the, boing, like bong bong, bong dumps, bong, 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 bing bong, Richard, bong bong.
Oh, what's that guy saying?
The imaginary friend. Yeah. Anyway, the point is when we talk about amnesia and this idea that like you can retrieve memories, it's important to know if the memories are still there to retrieve, like what part of the brain has been damaged.
Richard Kind.
Thank That's you. His name. Yes.
Sorry.
It's important to know, like, because if you're talking, there's, the, I think, and we're going to get into this some, there's this idea with amnesia that it's all in there, right? You just have to like find it. And that assumption is that the retrieval is the problem. Mm. Accessing the memory is the problem, but a belief that the memory has to be there. That's not necessarily always true with different kinds of amnesia. Because if you think about it, it really depends on what caused it and what's been damaged. But sometimes the memories are gone. And then the other thing is where the memory is made to begin with, which, again, I'm going to get into a little bit more in the back half of the show with like the idea of retrieving childhood memories. Mm-hmm. You don't make memories in the same way with a child, like when you have your child brain, your early, early, early baby brain does not cannot make memories the same way that your grown up brain can. So is the memory, was it ever there? All of this is part of the process. And if you're going to fix it, you have to really know what went wrong, you know, which is why there's not one pill for amnesia that makes it go away. But before I get to that, let's talk a little bit more about the Max Fun Drive.
Absolutely, Sydney. MaximumFun.org/join. We are asking you, we come to you once a year and ask you to join our family. And that is really what it is. Max Fun is an extended podcasting family, and we're asking you to become a member of it and join with us. Whatever you can pledge is a huge help. $5 a month, you're going to get a massive amount of bonus content, over 200 hours of bonus episodes, including Fast and Furious and Justin and Sydney.
I don't listen to it all back to back. Like, take some breaks, drink water in between.
That's right. It's very
intense. 200 hours. That's a long time.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Fast and Furious and Justin and Sydney. This is very intense listening. If you can do $10 a month, you're going to get a pin, a beautiful enamel pin designed by Megan Lincott. Ours just said homeopathy means pretend, which I had forgotten because we did it months ago, but still pretty
but
good.
But it's a great pen, and you get to pick whatever pen you like. Yeah. I like our pen best, but
you get the bonus content. You also get a Max Fun membership card. Where does this money go? Well, a small percentage of it goes to Max Fun to help run the network and keep things moving. We have ad sales teams that are working and different people who are helping us make these shows. The majority of it goes to the shows you listen to. You choose the shows that you enjoy when you sign up, and then you just give money straight to them.
Yeah, basically. You when you sign up, you just click whichever shows you listen to. So if you're listening, you know, to this show, mm-hmm. we could be one of them.
Yes, that would mean a lot. If you can give more than $10, there are other gifts. If you can pledge, let's see, at $20, you get a game pack, which is all the stuff from before, plus some Max Fun dice in a dice bag and Max Fun playing cards and hidden Max Fun symbolism all over. It looks really cool. And $35 a month, there's a camp mug with the Max Fun Rocket logo on it. And all the other stuff. But the real thing you're doing is you're making it possible for me to make us to make these shows.
And like, we're so grateful. If you mm-hmm. are a member, if you're already part of our family and donating, thank you. Thank you so much. If you're considering doing it, thank you. If you can't right now, but you share our show and tell somebody about it and share a link and, you know, tell people, that's great too. Thank you for helping us continue to do this.
Yes, we very much appreciate you. Okay, so where were we?
Now, the really interesting stuff, and I'm just going to get into it a little bit first, is how do you, when you get into things like people forgetting because they, you know, something has happened and they've forgotten, or as we've seen in like, you see this used in movies, and the question from a legal perspective has been, is the memory loss for secondary gain? And that's where you get into some really interesting, like, concepts about amnesia. If you think about like a murder trial, have right. you did you really forget what happened, or are you saying you forgot what happened? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. And in addition, in the early studies of memory loss and amnesia, we started to also study dissociative identity disorder along with that, you know, to try to understand how does that happen that, you know, you forget, so to speak, who you were and what you were doing and all that kind of stuff.
If you're unfamiliar with that, you will have seen it so tastefully and accurately depicted in the movie Split. that is perfectly scientific, as you said. I remember you saying as we watched the film, you said this is perfectly accurate and scientific.
No, I never said that.
That's a memory, though, isn't it? Isn't that interesting? I don't know. I have that memory. You don't. No one can say.
Plus, if we began to understand if trauma could induce memory loss as like a protective mechanism. If you could have some sort of traumatic event and you lose all memory of it because it's too much for your brain to experience, right? And that was the early understanding of it. We're doing this. Your brain's protecting you. I'm going to forget all this because it's too much for us to handle. Then some started to argue like, well, this is just this is physiology. This is good. Our brain is doing what it should do. We should encourage that kind of amnesia. Which is like homecoming, right?
Right.
Remember the podcast?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what if we could take away all your memory of all the bad stuff that ever happened to you?
Yeah.
And then send you back out into the world.
Not back out in the world. In that case, it was get you pumped to do a war again.
Well, yeah, that was bad. But
not great.
But anyway, and then others, you know, started to write about like true traumatic memory loss could leave you in a constant state of not knowing the present from the past. And you could just re-experience that trauma constantly because it's like trapped in your mind's present because it has not been made into a memory. Anyway, all this became very interesting to the alienists, especially the French alienists. Do you know what an alienist is?
Well, we did talk about it in the car yesterday.
That's Should true. I, but- you can go ahead if you'd like.
I don't remember, but that's memory, isn't it? I mean,
there's a show now. So I think it's more popular because there's a show called The Alienist, which is based on a book called The Alienist. So alienists have nothing to do with like extraterrestrials.
Not that they would tell us.
Alienist used to be the name for a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And it comes from the French alien for insane. And it was basically alienists help people who have become alienated from reality or from themselves, from their true selves that they cannot access because of their mental illness, that kind of thing. And early alienists really approached all this in a biological way. Psychiatric disease is a medical problem, just like all other medical problems. There's anatomical and biological roots, and so those must be the treatments. The alienists of the 20th century took it into like depth. Like psychoanalysis, depth psychology, like Freud, sit on the couch and let's get into your deepest, most repressed thoughts. It's interesting to see how I feel like we've come back the other direction again, you know. And so then from there, they started to get into ways to treat amnesia based on all this that they understood now. One of the first early treatments was from a French doctor and psychologist, Paul Soyer, who practiced back in the late 1800s and early 1900s and said, basically, you could help with amnesia if you could find like a memory. And the way you find it is through their sensory memories of it. Like you could retrieve some of the memory based on like, what did you smell? What did you hear? Let's describe the surroundings and then fixate on it and then continue to reestablish it, continue to discuss it, to like stabilize it, that you could slowly recount memories from the past. And he thought this was particularly good with like trauma. Like if something was traumatically induced, you could recover memories that way. But he found with things like dementia, that didn't work quite as well.
Yeah.
So those were some of the earliest ways to try to treat it. Now, of course, things have gotten better. And I want to talk about that and some of the myths. But before we do that.
No, I don't know.
What? Let's go to the billing department.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the
mouth. Okay, so before I get into one of the most often cited treatments in, I think, in TV and popular culture, I want to talk about one specific problem, which is, as you mentioned, in a lot of depictions of amnesia, it happens because you got hit on the head and it resolves when you get hit on the head again, right?
Yes. Which even the when you brought that up, I was like, oh, well, yeah. What happens with amnesia is you get hit on the head and then you get hit on the head again. It makes the memory come back. And I was like, as I said it to you, I was like, wait a minute. That can't be right. That can't be the way it works. So I'm assuming that is inaccurate.
Now, as I mentioned, there was a time when the study of the brain was like neurology, psychology. It was all kind of combined for a long time. Like all of it was acting together, which, again, I'm not saying as a criticism, like the more combined, you know, all these things are, the better understanding we have of them. But when we first saw the anatomy of the human brain, that it has two hemispheres, one of the theories that began to develop around it is that they almost did the same things, just like a backup system, sort of. Mm-hmm. Like, it just in case, I guess, one half goes bad, you got a backup half. Which, I mean, again, isn't a wild idea when you consider that, like, your kidneys kind of work that way. If you only have one, you can still be fine. You've got, like, a backup.
Right.
So because of this idea, the thought was that if they get out of, like, if they become unsynchronized,
okay,
then you'll have problems. Then you get like malfunctions. So our main thing with the brain is keeping the two hemispheres in sync. And there was, at the turn of the 19th century, there was a French scientist, Francois Bichat, who said that, you know, he believed in this, that the two hemispheres just mirror each other. And so if there's an injury on one side, like if you hit your head on the left, mm-hmm, and that side of the brain gets like knocked out of sync, mm-hmm, then it only makes sense that the way to fix it is to hit your head again on that side.
Makes sense.
To knock it back in sync.
No, Francois. No, that doesn't make sense. Think about what you're saying.
So that way, then they're back in balance. You just got to balance out the two hemispheres.
Can you imagine going to this guy and you're like, anyways, so sorry I'm late. I missed my appointment because, well, amnesia. And I'm hoping you can fix this for me. What's your solution? And this guy's like, well, what we shall do is the bonk on the head. Like, what? Sorry? Yes, the bonk, like the last bonk on the head. The bonk on the head. Imagine.
Well, here's what's wild.
Unthinkable.
This is where, like, certainty, self-assuredness goes so far in this world.
I'm imagining he was a white dude. It's like, only option, right? Has to be.
So he said, he wrote about it, but he never wrote, like, it wasn't like a list of, let me give you all the evidence. Here are all the times where this worked, or here's the studies I did. He just said, this happens so much that we know it's true.
Seems like the bonk on the head.
No, I mean, he stated it as a fact, like as if everybody would be like, well, of course, yeah, that happened to me.
The second bonk, obviously.
Everybody knows that.
He didn't have TV, which is wild, right? Like, he didn't have, like, in season 4, episode 13 of the Brady Bunch, you can see that Jan gets hit with the football, and it makes her, like, what is he basing this on?
He just said, obviously.
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 He's saying the bunk.
So despite the fact that he tragically died of a head injury in 1802.
Stop it.
Impossible. His work outlived him because the idea that brain asymmetry is the main problem in a range of, you know, psychological, neurological disorders, that persisted for a long time, Bichat's law of symmetry. And this idea that the second bonk would fix amnesia also persisted. And it really wasn't until, I mean, like 100 years later, that people began to say, you know, I actually think that getting hit on the head again will just cause more damage.
Yeah.
That head injury can cause brain damage, and another head injury could cause more brain damage, and we should probably not do that. But even today, you see it depicted, mm-hmm, which is, I mean, we know that, right? Like, please don't, if someone has lost their memory, please do not hit them on the head.
Yeah.
Actually, even if they haven't lost their memory, don't hit people on the head.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, head trauma does not restore memory despite, you know, all of cartoons.
Which is why that's like a weird, it's like, it's almost like the genetics of culture, right? It's like a cultural osmosis where it's just like for generations, like that's not coming from science. It's just generations of media, freaking like comic strips and mm-hmm. novels and stuff popularizing this idea. And then that concept just gets passed down and down and down until everybody's like, well, yeah, the second book, obviously.
Which underlines, by the way, a theme on our show, which is just because something persists for thousands of years does not mean it's true.
No.
This did not persist for thousands, but still, you get the idea.
Call appeal to ancient wisdom. It's a logical fallacy.
Now,
we've tried to puncture it as much as possible with our podcast.
The other big thing I wanted to talk about before we finish is in a lot of popular culture, you'll see hypnosis used as the way to retrieve memories.
Yes.
Have you seen that? Usually on like a crime series.
Yes. They'll take them deep.
Yes.
They'll recall.
The idea that you could fix amnesia with hypnosis is a pretty old one. Freud would use hypnosis to try to retrieve old memories. So the idea that if somebody has lost their memory, you could, you know, fix it with hypnosis, it dates back quite a while. Now, again, this rests on the idea that the memories are there, that you made them fine and they're still stored fine. And they've been organized fine and, you know, repeated fine and all that. But the retrieval is the problem. Mm-hmm. And you have, and that has to be the truth if hypnosis is going to work. Which in my head, I thought like, it's sort of like saying you're trying to land at an airport with no landing strip by buying bigger, better planes every time. So anyway, as long as that's the problem, then in theory, hypnosis could work. In theory, obviously, it would have to also be proven to work. And these are usually used for some sort of emotional trauma, not physical trauma like head trauma, but emotional trauma. You'll see hypnosis used to like you've repressed a memory because it was too upsetting. And mm-hmm. so we're going to use hypnosis to find it or to like tell you something about your childhood that you don't remember very well or to help you remember details of like a crime scene.
Yeah. Or a past life, perhaps.
Or a past life, I guess. I wasn't going to go there.
Yeah,
that's way outside my expertise.
Yeah, but if someone says, I can help you remember that you were homies with Bonaparte, and then you're like, well, maybe, you know, and then later they're like, I can help you remember a crime scene. Maybe we don't. Believe the second part so much because we do still remember the part where you said that I knew Napoleon in
right.
his life.
Right, exactly. And well, and all of these things, people who, I don't want to paint too broad a brush, there are hypnotherapists and they can specialize in just one area. And I'm certain there are hypnotherapists who would say, well, age regression doesn't work, forensic hypnosis doesn't work, I don't do past lives, but I do this for weight loss. That is out there. There are hypnotherapists that specialize in lots of different areas.
Let's do an episode about hypnosis at some point.
We need to
talk about this.
Hypnosis is a wide ranging thing. I just want to, and it's so big. I just want to focus on the memory retrieval aspect of it. And in addition, what I just mentioned, forensic hypnosis is a big area of interest. The idea that you could use it to solve a crime. So does any of this work? Hypnosis for any of these memory reasons, amnesia reasons. Well, first of all, hypnotic age regression, which is like, I can't remember something that happened to me as a child. So I am, and this is usually done in like a therapy realm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hypnotize you to take you back to when you were six or whatever, make you six again. I'm going to, like, you are going to be 6 years old sitting here today. And then you will be able to recount, relive, re-experience, remember whatever happened, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what we have found with that is that even though people will subjectively say, like they will describe feeling like a child, afterwards. They felt like a child. They acted like a child. We have seen this on like in these interviews. You cannot change the brain back to the stage of development, of cognitive development, to make you think like a child.
Right.
We cannot do that. We have no objective proof that we're actually doing that with hypnosis. That's what you would have to do to make you.
This is the problem with hypnosis. I don't want to keep talking about hypnosis because I do want to do an episode on it. But like, what I think does work about it, in my limited understanding, is making you very open to suggestion.
It does make you very open to suggestion.
So if I were to suggest that you were six now, I think that is well within the bounds of the power of hypnosis.
Yes. Well, I think what they've said is like, if you accept the idea that like putting someone in sort of it's like taking somebody to the right room of the house to help them remember how they felt about something, like recreating the circumstances. Could it help you remember something? I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Smells do that. We know a smell can trigger a memory. So like putting somebody in the mindset of acting like a child, could it? Yes. But we have no proof that you're actually remembering things you didn't remember before. Mm-hmm. You know, that you're actually. And again, part of this goes back to like, if you're trying to take somebody back to like the really wild stuff where like you're reborn, if you're trying to take somebody back to a memory that happened when they were like one or two, well, you don't store memories. Do you remember anything from when you were one?
No.
It's not because you can't. It's not because your memory won't go back that far. It's because when you were one, you weren't making memories the way your brain does now at 39. It just your brain doesn't do that.
Right. I was busy. My brain was busy learning how to like
walk. Yes. Your brain wasn't recording information the same way. So it's just not possible. The other thing is the idea of like hypnotic hyperamnesia as opposed to amnesia, hyperamnesia.
Like remembering
like super memory.
Okay. Right.
Like extra memory.
Like Mary Lou Henner. Friend of the family, Mary Lou Henner.
Can you induce that with hypnosis? Which I think of more like when you see on TV, like the Memory Palace.
Sure. Yes.
It's like that idea. Like maybe we could make you have a super memory if we hypnotize you. That happens on the show we were just watching, Dispatches from Elsewhere.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. If you hypnotize somebody, you could make them like go back into a memory and see things that they didn't see before. And what we have found in studies of that is that, no, you are no more accurate after hypnosis than you were before. You are just more certain of whatever you're saying. Okay. So we turn you into a surgeon. I'm sorry, surgeons. I'm sorry. Just a little joke.
Something a joke everybody can enjoy.
Just a little joke for my surgeon pals. I'm kidding. And then, of course, there's forensic hypnosis, which is how do we get a witness to a crime to help us solve the crime by hypnotizing them, and so we get more details from their witness statement so that they remember the incident more clearly, whether it be a description of the attacker or a license plate number. Sure. Or whatever, right? And this has been used, it may still be used to this day
in TV and movies or in life,
like okay. There were I have found early 2000s cases where this has been used. I believe this may still be tried.
Yeah.
It was hard to discover if like there are still forensic investigators who are doing hypnosis, because it's like a specific branch of hypnotherapy to do this. And there isn't a lot of data for this either. There are like anecdotes. I found this specific kidnapping case, Cowchilla, from the 70s, where like a bus driver with a bunch of kids, they were all kidnapped and kept somewhere underground, and the bus driver like dug their way out to get them out. But anyway, supposedly the bus driver was hypnotized to remember part of the license plate and like remembered such a big chunk of it that he couldn't remember before, but then once he was hypnotized, he remembered a big chunk. So like there are these anecdotes, right?
Right.
But then there are other anecdotes I found where like in Boston, there was this Brinks armored car robbery, and they hypnotized the witness for the license plate number of the getaway car. And he recounted a license plate number perfectly under hypnosis, and it turned out to be the license plate of the president of Harvard's car. Not because the president of Harvard robbed the armored car, but because the witness worked at Harvard and just saw that license plate a lot. So all of this
Or there's a far more compelling possibility, Sydney. The person you least suspect.
The president of Harvard.
The president of Harvard is the Pink Panther.
No, none of that. No. But the thing is, and there have been other studies where like they've had like simulated crimes in front of.
I know the Pink Panther is the diamond. Get off Twitter. Close the app.
Anyway, there are these wild studies in which like they have simulated crimes in front of witnesses. Like they don't tell them that they're about to be part of a study, and then they like do a fake crime in front of them.
Do a science all about them.
Yeah. I mean, like you'll read these older studies that probably wouldn't be approved today, where, and then they'll like interview people and then interview them under hypnosis. And then they've done this with real crimes, like ride alongs, to try to like actually see, can we get, and it just, there's no evidence that it ever works. It improves your certainty about memories, but it does, but it's really easy to suggest things, to implant things. With this process, it's very difficult to tease out because our brain wants to fill in gaps. And so hypnosis encourages us to fill in those gaps by thinking like, well, this helped me. So whatever I think makes sense there probably is the memory and not just what my brain is confabulating to fill in that gap. Mm. So I wondered if it is still admissible in court was my big question. And from what I found, and I am not a lawyer, but I did reach out to my Uncle Michael Meadows of Court Appointed. They do a legal history podcast similar to what we do, him and my dad. I reached out to him and I've talked to him about it. And from what I can tell, if it meets something called the Daubert standard, which has to do with like an expert witness testimony fulfilling like basically basically accepted as like this is what an expert would say or like yes this is real kind of thing, like how you judge whether expert testimony can be admissible in court or not. If it meets that, then it can be. And from what I found, there are times where like hypnosis has been found very clearly not to, because it is not widely accepted by the scientific community. Mm-hmm. But then I found that other times where it was admissible in different trials. So it was hard for me to tell. I think it varies. I think it varies state by state. And I think it varies probably judge by judge. Hmm. So I really think it might be up to the specific trial in some cases.
Wow.
But it's weird for me because it seems like we have no evidence that it actually does help with memory retrieval in any way. Just anecdote. The only thing that I will say is that there have been some therapists who have spoken out in favor of hypnosis specifically for dissociative memory loss. So if it is associated with dissociative identity disorder, hypnosis as part of therapy, as part of like a whole therapeutic range of, you know, treatments, not in isolation, but has been used with some like easing of anxiety around the memory retrieval, around the process of like re-remembering those things you've forgotten. Mm-hmm. They have found sometimes hypnosis can help with that anxiety that can be associated with that. Cause I imagine that can be very anxiety provoking to start remembering this whole identity that you had forgotten.
Yeah.
But the idea that it's this dramatic, we hypnotize you and then you wake up and go, I'm Sydney. Like that's not real. That doesn't work. The only other thing about amnesia and hypnosis, you know how after hypnosis you're supposed to have amnesia? Like they induce amnesia, right?
Right, right, right.
They don't want you to remember anything that just happened.
Yeah.
I tried to read why. Why do you want people to forget it all?
I don't know.
The answer I basically got was that it was stressful and we don't want you to think about it too much. Which leads me as a scientist to say, is that because it didn't work and we don't want you to think about it too much because then you'd figure it out. Anyway, how do we treat amnesia? Well, it depends on the cause. With things like Korsakoff amnesia, we found specifically like thiamine can help, but not for a lot of other things. There isn't one pill. You'll find like memory loss associated with dementia, you'll hear a lot about medicines on TV that can help. But what they're talking about is slowing the rate of like the progression of dementia, is slowing down how fast that progresses. They don't turn back time. Mm. They can't go back and fix what has already happened. And I think that's really important to understand about those meds. there are a lot of things like working with an occupational therapist, learning strategies to help keep memories and improve like the repetition and retrieval of what is still there, and digital aids to organize information as you're learning new things to help you keep and make new memories in a more organized fashion. There are all kinds of ways that occupational therapists can really help with that. And then preventing memory loss, like the easiest thing are managing chronic illnesses like diabetes or heart disease or cerebrovascular disease that could lead to strokes, that kind of thing. Cardiovascular exercise is good for your brain. Mm. I know that sounds weird. Do your crossword puzzles. That's great. But also do something that gets your blood pumping, that gets your heart pumping.
Well, Sydney, there's nothing that gets my blood pumping and heart racing like a good crossword puzzle. When I get an eight letter word with no clues to be seen, I feel like I've just, like, you ever seen the movie Crank?
No.
It's starring Jason Statham.
Is it about crossword puzzles?
No, but it's like adrenaline. That's like what I feel. You okay. Know what I mean? If his heart slows down, he dies.
Oh.
So he has the game. It's like Speed, but for the human heart.
But for the heart.
Yeah.
This
is an episode. Oh, now no. That's an episode right there. Crank.
I don't want to see this film.
Oh, there's a Crank too. Don't worry.
Exercise, healthy diet. And I would recommend that you try to avoid head trauma whenever possible.
You might also say don't drill a hole in your head.
That too.
Thank you so much for listening to our episode. We want to ask one more time. It's Max Fun Drive time. If you could donate, we would really, really appreciate it. To people who have already like gotten on board, thank you so, so, so much. MaximumFun.org/join is the place to do it. If you haven't been able to become a member, now's the time. For $5 a month, if you can do $5 a month, it's hugely supportive of us, but it also gets you a ton of bonus content, which is awesome.
Yes. So please, if you're in a position to do so, we thank you so much. If you already are a member, if you're already donating, we really appreciate it. This brings us joy, and we hope we can bring you joy.
Yeah. Did you have something you wanted to say?
I wanted to say that if you're more interested in forensic hypnosis, Court Appointed is going to do an episode to delve into more of the legal side of it, since I didn't understand all that. When can you use it in court? When is it okay?
So, either this week or next. Court Appointed, wherever fine podcasts are sold.
Yeah, with my dad and my uncle.
Thank you, the taxpayers, for the use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program. And thanks to you so much for listening and supporting us. We very much appreciate it. But until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.